Basically, last week we talked about, we talked about Solomon's temple. And years later, the kingdom has been divided. The kingdom of Israel has been divided. And there are prophets that are speaking to the kings, trying to guide them to follow Yahweh, to follow God. And they aren't doing very well at it. And one of them that comes along in the northern kingdom, which was called Israel, is Elijah. And one of the more famous Old Testament stories is Elijah having a showdown with the prophets or priests of another god named Baal. And he has this really dramatic victory. And Yahweh shows up and shows that he is the true powerful God. And the people are amazed. And they decide, okay, we're not going to worship that Baal god. We're going to worship Yahweh. He's the one who's God. And Elijah is really excited because he's had this victory. And then the king who witnessed it all, the king's name is Ahab, goes home to his wife, Jezebel, who was from a different nation. She was one of the main Baal worshipers. And, well, this is what we read in 1 Kings chapter 19. Now Ahab told Jezebel everything Elijah had done and how he had killed all the prophets with the sword. So Jezebel sent a messenger to Elijah to say, "May the gods deal with me, be it ever so severely, if by this time tomorrow I do not make your life like that of one of them." Basically, after his victory, Elijah had decided the best way to culminate that was to kill all of the prophets of Baal. And so she's saying, "You're going to be like those ones that you just killed." Elijah was afraid and ran for his life. When he came to Beersheba in Judah, he left his servant there, while he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness. He came to a broom bush, sat down under it, and prayed that he might die. "I've had enough, Lord," he said. "Take my life. I am no better than my ancestors." Then he lay down under the bush and fell asleep. All at once, an angel touched him and said, "Get up and eat." He looked around, and there by his head was some baked bread over hot coals and a jar of water. He ate and drank and then lay down again. The angel of the Lord came back a second time and touched him and said, "Get up and eat, for the journey is too much for you." So he got up and ate and drank. Strengthened by that food, he traveled 40 days and 40 nights until he reached Horeb, the mountain of God. There he came and went into a cave and spent the night. And the word of the Lord came to him, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" He replied, "I have been very zealous for the Lord God Almighty. The Israelites have rejected your covenant, torn down your altars, and put your prophets to death with the sword. I am the only one left, and now they are trying to kill me too." The Lord said, "Go out and stand on the mountain in the presence of the Lord, for the Lord is about to pass by." Then a great and powerful wind tore the mountains apart and shattered the rocks before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. After the wind, there was an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. After the earthquake came a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire came a gentle whisper. When Elijah heard it, he pulled his cloak over his face and went out and stood at the mouth of the cave. Then a voice said to him, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" He replied, "I have been very zealous for the Lord God Almighty. The Israelites have rejected your covenant, torn down your altars, and put your prophets to death with the sword. I am the only one left, and now they are trying to kill me too." The Lord said to him, "Go back the way you came and go to the desert of Damascus. When you get there, anoint Hazael king over Aram. Also anoint Jehu, the son of Nimshi, king over Israel, and anoint Elisha, son of Shaphat, from Abel-Meholah to succeed you as prophet. Jehel will put to death any who escape the sword of Hazael, and Elisha will put to death any who escape the sword of Jehu. Yet I have reserved 7,000 in Israel, all whose knees have not bowed down to Baal and whose mouths have not kissed him." I can spend hours in this because there's so much in this passage. But I just want to really quickly mention three things. First is that Elijah is coming from this unbelievable high. One of the most dramatic showdowns between God and another one of the foreign gods in the entire Old Testament, and he's at the center of God showing up in just an incredible way. And the very next page, he is at the lowest he could possibly be. sometimes we go through big things and we feel ourselves on the other side thinking, what's wrong with me? I just had all of this. Or we look at other people and wonder, what's wrong with them? Didn't they just see it? What's fascinating here is that God doesn't do any of that. God doesn't tell him to smarten up. God doesn't berate him for running. God doesn't give him a pep talk. God sends a messenger to give him food and encourage him to take a nap. When I read this, there's different ways you can read it. I see it very moving. He's under this tree saying, I just want to die. He wants it to end. And this angel comes and touches him. I can't think of any other time in the Old Testament when an angel touches someone. I have this in my mind, I see this as like a beautiful nudge. Just, hey, Elijah, you need something to eat right now. Come on. I've got something better for you than what you think you need right now. Just get something to eat. And after he eats, it's like, okay, now you need to sleep again. Just eat and sleep, man. It's okay. That's all. I just find that's just a beautiful image of compassion. That sometimes God is in the small, seemingly, like just the non-impressive basic things. Hopefully this encourages some of you who are wired just to help serve people in those small ways. That's God's way. You gave somebody a meal. You gave them a safe space where they could just let their guard down and relax. That's the heart of God. That isn't where things end. In the midst of it, God reminds Elijah of his presence. I could spend an hour just on how God did this, but it wasn't in the big ways. It was in this quiet voice that almost drew Elijah back to God. Not putting on a big show to be like, see, I got you. No. Come and be with me. Let's talk this out. Let's be together. And at that point where Elijah finally comes back, where he can actually engage with God, God reminds him that, hey, there's still a calling on your life. That great success wasn't the end. In fact, that might not have been the most important thing you did. Because right now you're going to go and you're going to call other people into this with you. And it's going to go on beyond you. And this darkness and despair isn't the end either. What lies ahead is going to look very different than what was behind, but it's no less God's call. And lastly, just that reminder that Elijah, you're not alone. You're not alone in this. I am with you. People are with you. No matter how alone you feel, you're not alone, and you're not meant to live this alone. One of the, in Canada, I think it's kind of Canada-US thing, maybe European as well, I don't know for sure, but there's this thing that tells us we need to be autonomous, we need to be independent, we need to be able to do it ourselves. That's not ever what God invites his people into. He invites us to this humility that says, I need to and I get to do this with others. It's not a show that we need to put on. It's a gift from God that we need to receive, and then receiving from that, go and sharing it with others. That's what Isabel and Madai have been talking about this morning, that we are receiving from God and sharing it with others. We're not expected to do this work alone. We are in this together.